the road must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well. Their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by.
In this February 2016 edition of Education Now, we feature an update on Parent Strike with Donna Yates Mace, master teacher, advocate, and activist for public education. We spoke with Donna in September of 2015. Hello, Donna, and welcome back.
Good morning, Athena. How are you?
Well, I'm doing pretty good. I'm really excited to be talking to you about events that are happening in our country for around public education and the empowerment of both teachers, parents, around the United States. I've been so interested in this since really I took my children out of public school, and then when I closed our private school, I wanted to dedicate my rest of my life to getting public education back to where it was, at least there, if not beyond, when I took my children out of public education. And so it's really wonderful for me to see this movement become so powerful in our country. And you're such an incredible focus for me around that, because you introduced me to Peggy Robertson. You got me in touch with her, and she heads up the opt-out movement, and so many other connections, especially with the SOS Save Our Schools March that you were a part of when Jonathan Cozol was also there. And I remember how disheartening it was that it didn't get more attention on the press, and I just hope that current things that are happening will get press, and I see that it really is getting more press, isn't it, Peggy?
It really is getting a lot more press than we used to get. I attribute part of that to social media. It means that the news stations cannot ignore what's going on, because it's going to be out there anyhow, so that it's to their advantage to come out and cover it and be part of what's going on with our schools. I also think we're finding more people are demanding that information because they're more aware of what is happening in our public schools.
Yes, I think so. I think you're absolutely right. Now, can you tell us some of the things that you feel that Parent Strike, which you helped start when just not so long ago, right?
Right. Parent Strike was started probably last August. It started coming into strength. And one of the very first things that we did was to promote an information about opt-out day, which was a handle. I know that New York, Michigan, Florida, schools in California, our parents in California, all were part of that, of making sure information got out early this school year for parents about opting their children out of testing. So we were real happy with that day. Since then, we have been helping promote an event that took place yesterday, the National Walk-In for Public Schools, and that was started, I believe, possibly by Milwaukee Teachers Union, and it spread like crazy, and I have seen stuff in the press yesterday and today from Los Angeles, from Chicago, from Milwaukee, from Cincinnati, from a New York school, and those are the ones I've been able to track down so far that had major participation with walk-ins. I know that there's a school in Orlando that has been doing it. They're on their, gosh, perhaps their ninth day now of the parents being at the school every morning with the teachers to support the teachers because of contract issues in that area. So The walk-in has grown, and I think we'll see more of them. Parent Strike continues to support opting out, and that's a big piece of our work right now, and to help parents understand that what they are participating in is really civil disobedience, that there could possibly be a consequence for their child by opting out. We haven't found that to be the case anywhere, but we do always want people to be cognizant of that fact. Opting out is getting a major push in New York State, which is where it really started the strongest to begin with, and they're trying to double their numbers this year. They're hoping to have at least 500,000 children opt out of the tests. And it's growing all over the nation. Florida has a really big group of opt-out Florida Network that is working very hard and feverishly, because their testing starts at the end of this month, to get people understanding what it is they're doing and how their child has to participate to avoid punishing the school. Of course, Colorado, where Peggy is, has a major group working there out in California. So we're seeing that everywhere. Parent Strike right now is working on several things, and this is with other groups also, to encourage parent and teacher attendance at school board meetings. I think it's time that our school boards and our superintendents see the people they work for. And also, there's becoming a real issue about how much is being spent on standardized testing at both the local and the state level. And I believe we're going to work on an action soon where people start calling for that. We'll be doing that in conjunction with other groups also, so it can be big when it happens. So we have all of that going on right now. And like I said, our main focus right now is making sure information about opting out gets to every place that it needs to get to.
Yes, it's so exciting. Now, there is this this opt-out conference in Philadelphia on February 26th through the 28th, and that should be incredible.
I attended the one they had last year in Fort Lauderdale, is where it was located, and much warmer in Fort Lauderdale in February than in Philadelphia, and I got to speak to people that, you know, I only knew them by name in the past, major players in starting the opt-out, Peggy being one of them, and other amazing speakers and parents, and it was well attended by members of other activist groups also, so there was a lot of information shared, so I would think this one in Philadelphia is just going to be very amazing. I'm looking forward to the information that will come out of it.
I am too, and the speakers, my word, they have some incredible speakers on child growth and development. And, you know, not to mention, the political, aspect of it that they're covering as well. I mean, this privatization of all of our public services is the most, I call it a conspiracy, frankly. I mean, what else could it be to?
It's obviously a plan, because we're going from one thing that we used to take for granted was a public service that's now being privatized to another. Our roadways, our prisons, our schools. It's all being taken over by for-profit companies.
Right.
It must be a conspiracy.
A public lands, you know,
right.
That's our water. I mean, people need to wake up. And you especially where their children are involved, you know, we want to believe. I know that as an immigrant, my parents were immigrants. My father had such faith in the public education system. And, you know, and some of it was displaced, you know, even then, but absolutely nothing like now. And the defamation of character of teachers who have gone through a system that the rest of the world looks to and says, we got our education at American universities. Their teacher training programs are so fantastic, and now they don't use it, right? I mean, that is such a pathetic statement. And
it's really, really, it's terrible because the men and women that are going through our teacher colleges and universities are learning about childhood development and human growth, and they know how the children should be taught, but yet they are not allowed to use what they know. They're forced into other systems that are not best for children. So it is sad that other nations continue to send their students to us, and yet our own teachers don't get to use what we teach.
Yes, it's just pathetic. And that's something else that I think, you know, opt out and is informing parents so that they are taking their power. And I'm just so excited about it. It's been 5 years now with the opt out, and it's just soaring. And of course they get this bad press as well, because that system, that testing machine, is so threatened by opt out. And
right now federal law has it in place that if 95% of the students in a school don't take the test, the school could be hurt financially, which is a ridiculous threat because it's tax money they're saying they're going to keep from taxpayers. I don't even know how that could be legal, but that's the threat. And so, you know, it's causing administrators in school districts and in school buildings to pretty much tend to try to intimidate the parents into having their children test, even though they've made the decision to have them opt out of the test. And so we're having to work with parents and, you know, and work with the law. I know in Florida, which is I'm most familiar with for their law, is as long as the students there either sign in on the computer or break the seal on the paper and pencil test, they're considered to have participated. So most parents are allowing their children to either sign in on the computer or break the seal and then answer no questions. Well, it's silly that we have a law that puts that kind of pressure on a child, that they must go do this one little piece. And it's hard for the parents because they know that the child then is being used as a political pawn.
Yes.
And that's not fair to our children either.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Sir Thomas Robinson, who is, you know, just world-renowned in education and child growth and development, he says that's the first thing that has to go, are those tests.
Well, I think we're going to see the test go, and I think we're going to find out we've been fooled by it, because what I see happening with education is that we are trending to using competency-based education instead. And that will be the children on the computers every day, and they will be assessed every day. And so that's a real fear I have, that we're going to think the tests have gone, parents will be happy, but what's really happening is the children will be tested daily.
Right.
And data will be gathered on our children daily.
Right.
They will lose the human interaction of testing. Of teaching and of learning, and it'll all be computer-based.
Right. There's you know, all this stuff about the importance of cursive. Well, of course, being schooled in Montessori, the hand, the development of the hand, the refinement of the hand is connected to all of, you know, the rest of the way that a child absorbs information in math, in science, in reading, in everything, and movement. It's so important. And sitting at a place on a computer all day long, you know, or for long periods of time, that's not movement. The whole body needs to move. Taking away recess, taking away the arts, which are the container for all of the emotional content, all of the expression that the child has, not only about their personal life, but about the world around them, is criminal. It is a criminal act. And my greatest anger, Donna, is that the unions have not stepped in. And
I teachers are very disappointed that our unions seem to be working more with the politicians and the corporations than with the practitioners in the classroom, sort of saying, wait, we're not doing what we should for these children. We know what best practices are. This is not it.
Right. We have a policy of best practices. There's a policy in public education of best practices, and that has been violated. And the union should have come out about that from the get-go instead of people telling districts not to even tell parents that they're testing. You know, what? I mean, you know, and then that the union supported this last change in, you know, changing it from Common Core to some other language, basically the same thing, and the union supporting that. I mean, I'm so angry at the unions, and I really feel the same with their support for Hillary Clinton, you know, endorsing her when they didn't ask the teachers whom they wanted them to support in the election. I have a lot of anger. However, I never want to lose the ability for what a union offers, which is collective bargaining. And so I am really hoping that it changes without its being destroyed, which is, you know, a lot of what, if some of the right wing had their way, they would do.
Well, I think there's plenty of people that want to destroy the teachers' unions. I think, though, that the grassroots teachers that comprise the union feel very much the same way you do. And I think, you know, change has to come from within the union if we're going to change it. And I'm hearing a lot of talk, and people are looking at what is the hierarchy? How do you work your way up to get on the ballot to be the president? You know, what do we need to do? How can we make this? So it's working for teachers again, because the only reason we have a union for teachers, essentially, yes, collective bargaining, but also to protect the students. And, you know, that's all. As soon as you go back to what's best for the students, the union is not defending that, so now it's time to change what's happening with our unions.
Right. I always thought of a union as a place where you would collectively decide how you felt about, you know, all these things, not just your salary, not
right.
just your package, right? But, you know, how do we feel about this person who's going to be running for election? How do we as a body feel? Do we want to support any of them? How do we feel about how the testing, you know, is this
right.
good? Does this reflect, you know, best practices? All of those things should be in the purview of a union. Now, I feel some of the hopeful things are the Chicago's teachers union, and I don't think that, you know, that they're going to stand still and let more schools be closed, and what's happening in Chicago is just so devastating. I think the parents and the teachers union are coming together. I think the same thing is happening in Washington, where the teachers said no, and actually they said it's unhealthy for the students to take tests. I think it's happening there. And in Los Angeles, I think that the teachers unions are starting to take a stronger position. Is it happening for you guys there in Florida?
We see a lot happening in Florida, not from our union, but from our teachers and our parents banding together. So our local unions are now working with parents, and we're seeing strength coming. So hopefully it's going to make its way up into the state organization also. So
yeah.
I can name 5 districts out of our group that have very strong teacher-parent alliances right now that I think will make a big difference. Parents are realizing that a lot of what they've heard Is it correct? They're now listening to their teachers. In Volusia County, we have three parents that are organizing meetings with parents and teachers so they can actually sit down and talk about what the school should be like. And in Seminole County, that's where we've had our parents standing out in front of some of our schools saying, you know, the contract you're offering our teachers is ridiculous. Our teachers are the people with our children all day, and we want them treated fairly. And they're attending school board meetings together, teachers and parents, and speaking. And, you know, we're seeing that Broward County has a caucus out of their teacher union that is doing all kinds of amazing reach outs to the community and food drives and really getting involved with their community, and therefore they're garnering a lot of parent support because of that, because now parents are getting involved in the activities also and assisting. So, but it's all grassroots level. It's not state level yet. But then what we're seeing is, you know, Chicago, Los Angeles, Washington, that's not whole areas. That's pockets, very strong pockets and large pockets, but still pockets. So until it can get statewide, which is our goal, and I guess it will never get statewide until we get these other groups going.
Yes, so. But you know, what you just described to me that's happening in Florida is exactly what happened in Chicago. You
right.
know, and in these other areas. And so, actually, it's happening. You know, what you described is that it's happening there. And I know that it, in a lot of smaller areas, it is happening. You know, in some areas, you know, they have started. I try to make a distinction about charters, because there's these chain charters that are run by these privatizers and that participate fully in the testing terribleness
right.
and discriminate against students with disabilities, and an entire litany of disgraceful actions and abuse of students. I want to distinguish between those and these charters that were started by parents and teachers who they saw the writing on the wall, you know, some of them with No Child Left Behind, and, you know, it just got worse. And so they start a little charter, right? And it, you know, to try to do education in a more holistic way. I visited some of these, and they're just lovely. Others of them, you know, they're okay, but, you know, it's not like they are denying the child of movement or of all of the. In other words, they are working for the child, for the benefit of the child, and that makes me happy. There's also these sort of, I call them Goldilocks zones, but they're always in very affluent communities, you know, like
yes.
like the South Bay here in Northern California, you know, in Palo Alto area. Those schools are just fantastic. Of course, they never bit into the apple of Prop 13 and taking their taxes away from public education, their property taxes. And so that,
uh-huh.
you know, that gave them a leg up from the get-go. So I see that, you know, I see that, these all over our country, you know, and all a person would have to do is to go visit some of these model schools and know that their child was not in that environment. And
right,
that,
and that was the original goal of charters. The original reason the whole idea concept was even thought of was to give educators a place to try new ideas, and if they were then successful, they would transfer into the public school. But then once it became an avenue to make a profit, most of that has come to a total stop, because the only people who can even afford to open up a charter school now are the people who are the corporations that have the money behind them.
Yeah. Yeah, it was an idea for innovation, and it,
right.
you know, and to have more hands-on and more project-based and all of the things that are wonderful in education. And if they were really got the money that they needed, I know that the charters that I visit, most of the teachers do not make the salary of a teacher in the regular system. So they're already making a sacrifice. They also don't have the kind of benefit package, you know, for their whole family, you know. And so it's a sacrifice. And teachers shouldn't have to sacrifice.
Nobody, never should a teacher sacrifice. So the teachers in the charters that are the charter chains, Kentucky Fried Children's schools, also don't have the benefits or the pay, and they're making a sacrifice, and I wonder if they're aware of the damage that style of education is doing to the children.
Oh, I bet that they're not. And I think that's the other thing is that the reason that they had to do this entire defamation of character of teachers was so that they could bring in people that did not have education, did not in some cases even have their ECE units.
Right.
That you need, you know, to work with young children. And bring these people in and call them teachers. And to have the public accept that, blindly, it breaks my heart. And so I'm just so happy that this movement is getting strong. And I heard that there was like a 20,000 people march. Was it in Los Angeles, I think?
Right. All told, there were 20,000 people out yesterday for the school walk-ins. That's a lot of people in the morning when they usually go to work.
Yes, it was. It was exciting, and it was rejuvenating for me. I'm very excited about it, and I want to see a change in my time. Well, what could you tell us about, you started this group called Teacher to Teacher.
Teacher to Teacher kind of just started as a whim when we first started Wear Red, the administrators. We realized that as we were combing through news and everything, feeds for information about educational news, we were always coming up on these cute ideas for the classroom or encouraging pieces or amazing research about doing this particular thing, how it supported best practices. Well, it didn't really fit on We're Red for Ed because that was more of a news page. And so we started Teacher to Teacher, which has grown tremendously. And that page just basically has teaching ideas and fun ideas for the holidays and all the things that I know I personally used to love to have at my fingertips back in the old days. You had to really go looking for it as a classroom teacher. I know last night I personally was going through a Twitter feed and looking for things for Wear Red to post about news, and I found like the application to be an astronaut. Wasn't that a fun thing for a teacher to share in a classroom? That, oh look kids, if you want to be an astronaut, this is what you would have to do. And I don't know how many teachers even have time to do that anymore since most of them are working on scripted lessons, but the group continues to grow. Ironically, we are teachers TO to teachers. There's a new group, Teachers Number 2 to Teachers, that apparently has Bill Gates backing. And so we're kind of like, wow, who are you and why are you out here and kind of mimicking what we've been doing for years? So, but that group just started because we just, all of us were educators and we wanted someplace to put all the neat stuff we found that, you know, we would use in our classrooms and thought somebody else might want to use in theirs. So that's mostly an encouraging page. What we have discovered in the last probably 18 months is we don't put very much political over there, but occasionally we'll put something over there because we know it's going to impact teachers in the classroom, and their responses back to us now are very political. So I would say that teachers who maybe 3 years ago weren't watching the political news, even when it came to their job, are now very aware of what's happening and what's going on around them. So, you know, I think that's great that we're seeing more and more teachers that are very aware of what's happening to their practices.
Yes, I think that that's exciting news, really. Now, you're also a proud member of the Badass Teachers Association?
Absolutely.
Do you want to talk about them? They're quite a large group.
Badass Teachers, now nationally we have over 56,000 members. We have a group in every state. I help admin the Florida group. In fact, we have four groups in Florida now. Many of the states now have either regional groups, and they also have some Facebook pages that they administer. We have a Twitter feed for every state. And what the purpose of Badass Teachers is, of course, to just call out things we know are not best practices, be it political, be it, you know, theory they're wanting us to put into place in our classroom, like scripted lessons, all the bad laws that every state is trying to pass right at this moment while we're talking. It's incredible what they're trying to do to public education nationwide. And, of course, we monitor the national laws also, the federal laws. Badass Teachers are in the middle of a fundraiser right now, and part of those funds will be used after they're raised to put signs on city buses in some of our major cities around the United States about some of the problems in public education to help, you know, get to more of the public and get that information out there. So
yeah,
there's always a lot going on with that.
Yeah, I'm really glad that they're there. And I heard Arnie Duncan, who was, for those who are listening to Education Now, to this broadcast, podcast with Donna Yates Mace, Arnie Duncan, who was the, you know, the public school, President Obama's, what was his title, Donna?
Secretary of Education.
Secretary of Education. There we go, Arnie Duncan. He has resigned, right?
And yes, he's gone.
He's gone. And there was this group called, you know, something against Arnie Duncan. I found out that he has taken a job with the testing companies. Did you see that, Donna? Did you see that?
Yeah, I have not heard where he landed. I will have to research that.
Yeah, I wish that I had the exact information, but I will send it to you after our talk, that he has taken a job with a company, you know, that's related to these testing companies. And one of the reasons that I didn't really go use the page that was a group of people who, you know, were opposed to Arnie Duncan was because I found also on the page that there was a lot of racism. In other words, that it was Obama. He was Obama's secretary, and Obama was black, and what they wanted to do, you know, was, you know, they want to make our kids go to school. I was just appalled.
Their unfortunately is why charters get supported also, because people can segregate that way and not make it, not announce what they're doing.
That's right. That was my problem. And although there is a lot of great people on that page, you know, and I should not be so uptight, I guess. I never find that on the page, you know, that Anthony Cody and Nancy Flanagan started Teachers' Letters to Obama. I don't find that kind of, you know, to me, not well-educated reasoning. And
it's not tolerated in the batch at all. I mean, we have plenty of fights to fight, and we don't have time for people who have misguided reasons for supporting things.
Yeah, I know. I was amazed too, because I thought the BATS was such a big group. You know, I'm going to see this there, so I don't know if I can do this, but I haven't seen it there.
Well, the bats, I'm going to say they have some amazing people who work their main page. It is watched 24/7.
Yes.
There's always somebody on duty watching for that kind of person coming onto the group and trolling into it. So,
Isn't that wonderful?
Nothing can be deleted without a... It's horrible that we have to do that, but then it takes a vote of at least five of this group to decide if something will be deleted or allowed to stay.
Right. So, well, I can understand, these disagreements on issues and, that's a debate. It's great. I don't mind that at all. But mine, my kids do this, that kind of like, that just doesn't have any place in education, from my perspective. And so I don't want to waste my time arguing with people like that, just like I don't post a lot of Donald Trump stuff, I never really post about him on my page because it's sensational. I mean, there's enough of that if you just look at most media.
You can find that if you want it. Right.
Right. And
right.
I want substance.
That stays out of that. And I know that on We're Red, we have tried very hard to even be bipartisan. We're not putting opinion out there. We're putting news out there for people to follow.
Right.
And they can do with it what they want. It's not even a page for debate. That's because they do encourage discussions and debates. It does have to be monitored, and that's when you find people that just do not look at the collective group as our children. I mean,
right.
they're distinguishing either by socioeconomic or by race or by religion or by gender identification, and we can't do that with children. They are our kids, and we need to do the best for them. Who was it, Dewey or somebody that said what the most educated and wealthy want for their children is what we should want for all children? Just paraphrasing. And we can't decide which children are in that group. All children is all children.
All children is all children. And really, if we had, a decent student-faculty ratio, I also heard that they're talking about putting as many as 100 to 1 in a classroom. Can you imagine that? All of the research about how terrible that is. I was appalled. I mean, there's so much.
But 100 to 1 won't be a problem, will it, Athena, if they're just looking at a computer monitor all day?
Oh, but that's the whole, the entire thing
is
a problem.
It's frightening.
It is frightening because at 100 to 1, even if they're sitting in their computers, a teacher can't then read a child child is hungry. Oh, that child is having a, they just discount the value of everything that has to do with caring for children. And,
it goes right back to best practices. What do we know is best for children, and why aren't we doing that?
Yeah.
I recently had a conversation with a woman who, interestingly enough, is interning in education, also running for school board for one of our local districts, and she was interning in a kindergarten class, and the children had an assignment, something was read to them, and they were supposed to sketch what they thought they had heard in the story. And so she said to the teacher, they need crayons. And the teacher said to her, we don't have time for them to use color. They just need to draw with their pencil and keep going. And I thought, when you take color away in a kindergarten class, we have a real problem.
Oh, you have such a problem. We have such a problem when you don't follow the child. That's the Montessori
quote. These 5-year-olds get 3 minutes to draw a picture with a pencil of what they heard in a story.
Right. Now, you've taught a long time, and you know that when you're in a classroom and you see that a child is particularly jazzed about space, well, then you could go, like you were talking about, and find this article on, flying in space that you were talking about. Did you say it was a... What did you say it was on the...
About flying to be an astronaut with NASA, yeah.
Yes, and you can, you know, then follow the child and say, look what I found.
Now, and then they'll read.
Yeah, you know, isn't that beautiful? Isn't that what education is about? You know, that to me is what education is about. And also, you know, like when you see that a child is troubled, or you see that the mom is pregnant, and you know, because you actually see the parent, right? It makes such a big difference in your interaction, because then the student sees you as a part of their, you know, their lives, their gestalt, and it has a meaning that goes on for the rest of their life.
The child has to be a real person to the teacher.
Yes,
it's
that's
not
right.
Not just something that comes into your classroom.
Right. Yeah. And I've talked to teachers where they've said, you know, even in the best of situations, it was getting so bad that they couldn't go to the restroom. There wasn't an aide in the classroom. You know, there should be an aide in the classroom. It should be the optimum, you know, is two to 24 kids, you know, with either that main teacher and then an aide. Well, then the aide is there so that the teacher can go to the restroom. Or if a
I don't think you'll find an assistant in any classroom anymore. Even some of our higher need classrooms with children with disabilities, the aides are only there maybe part-time, if at all. That's one of the first things that's probably been cut out of budgets. Isn't that sad? We've cut the people out of the classrooms so we can afford to pay for testing, because testing's very expensive.
Isn't that so? I mean, really, I want there to be this criminal lawsuit. I can't help it. And once again, of course, I don't really blame President Obama. I feel like he's had a lot of obstruction and a lot on his plate. And I don't think, you know, I would like to feel like he would not support Rahm Emanuel anymore or Arne Duncan. That would be great. But I don't, like, I feel like he has a lot on his plate, and that there has been so much obstruction of his presidency that is also criminal. And it's continuing. So.
Oh, I think it'll continue until he's out of office. Now, I don't believe he's been the friend to public education we had expected.
Right.
But I just don't know if it's because we couldn't get to him and talk to him, or if he just really put that much trust in Arne Duncan and now he's putting it into John King, and the parents in New York are having a fit about that.
Right.
So, you know, I just don't really know what to think. I do know the new law that was passed, the ESSA, is as bad or worse than No Child Left Behind and Race to the Top. So
yes.
Parents don't need to think it's better. They need to definitely stay alert. Teachers are very alert nowadays. We're no longer the complacent crowd that we used to be of docile workers.
Right.
And, you know, hopefully we'll see at least people speaking out, seeing changes, seeing group actions that are nationwide now. And hopefully, you know, that'll all change. I do want to, while we're talking, to make sure that we encourage your listeners and that we spread the word about the Save Our Schools March and National Call to Action this summer in Washington, D.C., beginning on July 8th. I think that's going to be a wonderful gathering of educators and researchers and activists and parents. And, you know, it could be very well become the turning point.
Oh, well, I think so.
How many other people care?
Right. It's from July 8th to July 10th in Washington, D.C., right?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, and do you know yet who else will be attending? Will Jonathan Cozzal be back?
I do not have a list of all the speakers yet. I know that most of the major activist groups, Save Our Schools, National, or the Network for Public Education, are supporting this, BATS are supporting it. So I think that the speakers will be every bit as good as they were in 2011, if not better.
Well,
so
I will certainly keep, I will certainly keep people informed on the Education Now page on Facebook and Google about those developments. And I will also let them know about where Red for Public Ed, well, Red for Ed, and Teacher to Teacher. And I'll be sure that I don't get the Bill Gates page. Now there's someone that I can't. That's another person. Bill Gates is another subject, but what his involvement in this?
He's a program of his own, isn't he? Oh my gosh! Really?
I just his ego. My word. Now
he's working to undermine the Washington state law, where they said they couldn't have charters. He's working on ways. He has worked on ways around that. Dora Taylor, an activist in Seattle, has.
Yes, I've had her. Okay. She's been a guest on Education Now. She's wonderful,
good.
Dory.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I love what's happening in Washington, and I'll try to find information on that Bill Gates issue. I did see a little bit on about it, and his trying to stick his nose into their business when they say no charters.
Right.
Yeah, and especially of the kind that he supports. Oh, my goodness.
Right. He is not supporting the, I have a great idea, let's try it out kind of charter. He's supporting the let's make $1 million charter.
Yeah, he's not saying, if you're a teacher and you have an innovative idea, send it in and we'll see if we'll fund it.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice?
Here's my prescription.
Yes, that is what
I have no credentials in education or child growth and development, but I will dictate
how to do it.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Really. It's just disgusting. Well, now, so we'll keep abreast of the SOS Save Our Schools March, July 8th through July 10th in D.C. We will keep abreast of the United Opt-Out Conference in Philadelphia, February 26th through the 28th. I will hope that people will go to the pages that are open for the public. For instance, Obama's Teachers Letters to Obama is a closed group, and so is Badass Teachers Association. But Wear Red for Ed is not.
Open. Badass Teachers also have an open page. So for teachers that are reluctant to join Badass Teachers because they get so threatened in their jobs, there is now an open fan page on Facebook also.
Okay,
that
great.
That they can go to and just follow there.
Right. So there's a fan page for Red for Ed. There's a fan page Teacher to Teacher. And there is a fan page Badass Teachers as well. I'm learning from Peggy. And, from Donna. I'm learning from Donna Yates Mays. And then there is also a, there's another page. Oh, is there an open, page for, Parent Strike?
Yes, there is. Parent Strike runs an open page, the group, and also a Twitter feed.
Great. That's so great. Yeah, I don't do Twitter, but I love hearing that all of these things are getting connected to different ways to communicate with a broader audience. Now, I want our listeners to know that Peggy has a contact. Can people contact you at your email?
They can at dmace8@aol.com.
dmace8@aol.com. And, of course, Donna herself is on Facebook. And, you know, for those of you who are like, Athena, you haven't told us much more about Donna. Well, I have in other shows because, of course, Donna's been on Education Now. She was on Education Now this past September, as I told you in the very beginning. And then I first had an interview with Donna on September 1st in 1911. And you can find those links on the Education Now website. And but Donna, for those of you who want to hear it in this in this broadcast, Donna retired from teaching 35 years in public schools in Jacksonville, Florida. She's the mother of six, the grandmother of 16, which you wouldn't believe from listening to her, right? And the administrator of several Facebook pages, including the new group Parent Strike. So thank you so, so very much for being my guest again on Education Now, Donna. And thank your grandchildren for sharing you with me.
So I will let them know.
All right. And have a great day.
Thank you for the invitation. Okay, and you too.
Oh, God. Pardon me?
You have a good day, too.
And thank you for what?
Oh, for inviting me to be on your program.
Oh, it was my great pleasure. It's always a pleasure to have you on, Donna, and I hope we'll do it again. I must say that you and Philip Cantor and Peggy have been just fantastic, and I've so much enjoyed the growth of all of the things that the three of you have been involved in. And you have a great one.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
You, who are on the road, must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well. Their father's hell did slowly go by. Them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know.